Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Optimism Show. Today, once again, we have the king of mini apps, Samuel Huber. Samuel, it's a pleasure having you here today.
Hey, I think you talked to Alexandra at Morpho. She said something similar. I wouldn't call myself that, but I think we're the ones that built the most mini apps in production systems, especially for clients all across Privy Partner, Base Ambassador, Farcaster. Like HorseFacts called me a Farcaster Ambassador. So that's not official. We're doing a lot of mini apps.
A lot of mini apps. And I'm just going to jump right into it. I'm really curious, what is someone, when let's say I decide to build a mini app, what is the first thing someone needs to consider or ask themselves before even going to build a mini app?
What's the goal? Is the goal for your mini app to bring you more users? If so, then you have to build top of funnel. And then how are you going to capture those users so that they actually retain? If it's, okay, well, you want, you're a crypto company, you want transactions, then okay, you should build the easiest flow that maximizes the pathway into a transaction, meaning least amount of friction, shortest pathway, make it as few clicks as possible, but with just enough information so that like they can easily follow through, get through. And that's where then you drive a lot of transactions. And then you want them to spread it and share it, them being the user that just transacted. Because most likely after that transaction, they're like, oh, wow, I did this cool thing. So you like do sound effects, UI, like you just really make it pop, make the sharing easy. Then you share it. Maybe you even add like a referral system because you have the context of who posted it, who opened the mini app. You have that wallet. You can actually share fees with them. And then you just drive hella fees like through that. And that's usually the two types of customers coming to us. And then there are others where it's like, you can't really build this without a mini app because they want the social Farcaster context. They want the crypto wallets in there. And there, sometimes it's just more entertainment or a tool or something. And then you just make it as low friction as possible. But the thing you have to consider when building a mini app first is...
But when it comes to why, and also like, as you're saying, like if you build top of funnel, which makes perfect sense if you're building top of funnel. And in my opinion, I believe a lot of crypto companies kind of get that a bit wrong. Like if you're doing something top of funnel, it should be as little friction as possible. So would you say like mini apps in general would be the best place for mini apps is simply being as a sort of like a new and improved lead magnet to get users to what you're actually doing? Or there are some additional
I think it's a very good application for a mini app to be your top of funnel because you have push notifications, you have the context of the user, you can write them a direct message as well. So you have a lot of pathways to re-engage the user. So the cool thing if you engage with them in a mini app first is you have a lot of ways for re-engagement so you can experiment. The other thing is it's so lightweight for the user to come. And then with the re-engagement, you can also keep them around and track them. One cool case study that I would highlight is Ask Gina, which is an AI chat that has all of the crypto data and all of the crypto context. So a lot of people can't get that from other AI chats, so they use Gina for that. Way that that mini app works is this mini app literally is the full-blown like chat. It's like if you were to open a regular chat app on your phone, this is how it feels like in the Farcaster or Base app or whatever other mini app platform. The cool thing there is you're instantly logged in. So for me, honestly, as a user, it's like they currently don't have an iOS native app. So I have to either go on web and log in if I want to check something on mobile, or I just use the mini app. I'm instantly logged in. If I need funds to have that wallet trade for me, I can top it up because I already have my mini app wallet there. I don't have to fiddle around with like topping that up on iOS through whatever stupid way I can't get my wallet to work in a browser in Safari. So you can also use a mini app to literally reduce friction in your main app. Though the most successful uses we've seen is drive one KPI as a top of funnel or games like Favil from Limonian team has a few thousand daily active users. Clankermon from Matthew Fox and team from Excel Studios has thousands of users and they do that purely in a mini app. It doesn't exist on web for both of them because they can re-engage with notifications, everything so easily. So yes, you can build full apps, though for most teams that have full complex apps like DeFi protocols, it usually makes sense to have like a short flow of you want to drive deposits, you want to get people rewards, you want to do referral programs, abuse the social and the virality as much as you can and mainly do that. And for professionals, you have them go to the power user tool, which is their own web anyway. So you can just link them out from the mini app when they want to do advanced stuff.
When you, I'm really curious, when you approach a mini app, so let's say like a crypto entrepreneur or a builder that already has an app, what are the first things to think when approaching a mini app? Do you take like a snippet of your app, or like what is the mindset over there that you're like, okay, this idea could actually become a mini app and something that's
I literally
cool.
give you what I do. Usually what happens is people reach out to us and they're like, hey, we have this product. We're thinking about a mini app. So they sent me a URL or in their mail when they book a meeting. I can see where, like, which company they're from. I go to their webpage, and since I'm mostly on a laptop, I just then have to resize the browser. The other thing I would do is just check it on mobile. You just resize the browser to the smallest thing you can get your browser to be and see if that app still works. I would take a bet that it's like you have better odds at winning a coin flip than getting a crypto app to work well in that screen size. And that doesn't even account for mobile having bad wallet connection UX. So that is when you already have a browser wallet and you're used to that flow of friction. So then it's like, okay, if they pass that test and they're mobile friendly, then we can talk about, okay, does it make sense to make the existing app a mini app right away, link into a certain page where you already have that actionable flow that the user can just go through? Mm-hmm. Usually though, since it's not like that, we then look at, okay, what does the application do? What's their goal? Like back to the initial question of why, like what's their why for thinking about a mini app? And then we just literally take their app and we rebuild some of it leaning on their existing design or improving it for mobile.
Makes perfect sense, honestly.
Which it kind of sounds weird to say, yeah, we kind of just built a separate app. Though there's two reasons for it. Most clients actually prefer that, because then we can build a dedicated flow, we can build the sharing, we can full-on drive the execution speed, and we don't have to coordinate with their production launches on their main app. Also, it doesn't clutter their main app code bases, because for mini app, you bring in a lot of like mini app SDK-specific stuff that you don't need in the main app if it's outside of the mini app. And then you have to check, okay, is this in mini app? Is this out of mini app? Is this in mini app? Is this out of mini app? And all of that spaghetti code, you can save yourself by having two different code bases. And then you could share the underlying API. So some of those clients have like either their own SDK or internal libraries or just like a public API we can consume. And then the mini app is built on top of the same code that runs in the main app. So the only thing that's different is the front end implementation there.
On one side, it makes perfect sense because you speed up the development of the mini app so much. So as you said, you don't really rely on the whatever is happening within the company. So the mini app can fly on its own.
That's the positive way of phrasing it. The other side is also you just don't fuck up the production app. And you also don't have to worry about how big the production app is if you're fiddling around there to build up the mini app. And also, if for whatever reason the mini app project for them didn't really work, they want to go a new direction, their production app still is unaffected and they don't have to tear down that part of the code base we just added. So there's literally a bunch of reasons.
From what I noticed, especially on Farcaster, there has been like more and more mini apps coming out as well. And it seems like some of them, I would argue actually most of them, have quite a short life cycle.
Yes.
When it comes to the mini app, like what are your thoughts on this? Like, what is actually the short-term play with mini apps? Is there a long-term play, or is it right now just games that are mostly successful in mini apps?
Let me give you two case studies of actual client projects we had. One is we did an activation with Pooup for 3 days, raised $2,500, where each user had to pay $3 in ETH and mint a Pooup for it, and that got donated to a Farcaster DAO/charity. So that activation lasted 3 days. Everyone minted a Pooup. It literally was a quote-unquote throwaway app, which is like, hey, we built that code base to be available for 3 days, and that's it. So we literally also built the code base in the way of like, hey, we need to get the screens up. It needs to be good enough. It needs to work. But it's like, we all know that this only has to work for 3 days. Interestingly, we built the code base so sturdy that the Pooup studio team took it over and it's like, can you open source this? Obviously we did. And then they then resold that to clients actually. So now that is they're literally now having their internal teams like code up on top of that mini app base, improve it and sell that to clients that want mini apps to have Pooups, which is like really fun to see that their code base was good enough for that. But that was a throwaway 3-day activation, right? So you knew that you were building there. For some other mini apps, it's just like, well, if it's a personality quiz, then how many times are you going to do the quiz, right? Or like for a game, how good is the game loop to really attract you? and for you to stay around. You can see how many game launches without mini apps just go on every single year that are a splash for a week and then they get boring, or how many actually stick around. Long running sample though is if you take the Morpho app, we had like a few hundred thousands, I think like 120, 150,000, something like that, dollars in deposits through mini apps. Usually like all retail users, like the average transaction was, I think, around like $5 or something. Uh-huh. And yeah, it was $5. The top percent, like the top people, they deposited like over $5,000 into that mini app, which is kind of stupid. Like, why do you have $5,000 in your Farcaster wallet? Anyways, that app was built to stay around. Right? Like, it was set up in a way where you just know that you can go here. This is the easiest way for you to deposit and earn yield on your USDC. And it works globally. So you don't need like access to banking, which a lot of people in Nigeria, Indonesia really appreciated, Latin America as well. So there was some usage there. And some like US folks literally just appreciated it being way faster than going to the main Morpho app on web. And that's why they dumped $5,000 in there through that. And then we just added the features that they can claim their rewards. So you had all the features you needed. Like, you can earn, you can withdraw, and you can get the rewards. Cool. That app stayed around for 9 months, now is going into the 9th month, and it still is used, even though we don't market it or whatever. Why does it stay around? People saved it, so they have it on their quote-unquote home screen. They tap back into it when they realize they have money and deposit. Yeah, so that's the one that's more long-running. Why is that long-running? Well, because it's like a finance, it's like your banking app, basically, right?
It has an ongoing thing that you can use it over and over again. But if you're doing a mini app, regardless if it's like short term or long term, like what are the, and also I'm curious, like what is your line of thinking of how do you even approach measuring success? Like, what is success? Because I love how you say things in the sense of keep things simple.
Yes.
But on the other side, what are the actual things to consider there, like to actually combine it all into like a really a company ecosystem as well, because it's an addition to what they're like the company's already doing.
So I'll give you the development boutique side of it, where we as a business consider it a success if the client is happy, we deliver it on time and within budget. So that's the three that we want to hit. Plus also that we're happy and proud of what we shipped, but that usually coincides with the client being happy and being on time and on budget if we expect it well, which usually we do. So that's the short answer. Client is happy, we're happy. Okay, so what makes the client happy? We go back to the why. Like, we figure out what's the why. Like, why do they even want to do that mini app? Is it users, transactions, blah, blah, blah? If it's transactions, then they usually have a number in mind that they want to hit. So you just have to make sure you hit it. How do you then do that? Marketing. Like, Farcaster is a social app, so we have a social protocol there. The other one is coordinating with other people, and like, we know the ecosystem very well, so we can say, hey, you should plug into those apps, you should coordinate with those people, do an activation here, coordinate some live streams or like co-market or get together. We'll connect them with the official teams at Base and at Farcaster. So maybe we can like be promoted from their side and reposted and get featured in the app so that more users trickle in. There's a lot of ways to play those games on the numbers. The other way to just measure those numbers is, well, if you do transactions in the app, then you can measure that and you can look it up on chain. If you just care about brand and you want to get known, that's a little harder. Like, that's usually brand marketing. So it's like, how many times? Yeah. How do you measure that? Well, one way to measure that literally is followers on the brand account, like that they use to promote the mini app from and get mentioned. The other one is, because Farcaster is fully programmable, I can write one database query that we usually run for clients, like monthly actually, for some for reporting, for others, like beginning of the project, after the project, to snapshot how many times was the domain of the mini app shared. It's like when you share it on the feed, you have to paste the link. Yeah. So if we know how many unique casts were made with that link, we know how many times it was shared. So we can give you, for Morpho, for example, that was like 750 times over like half a year. Which if you break that down is like more than once a day somebody posted about that app on average. Obviously, there's spikes and some days we didn't graph it out. We just looked at the aggregate number. WAP had like over 400 in those 3 days because it was really just buy, mint POAP, share that you got the POAP, that you got that status, and then you're done on the mini app. That was it. So like the sharing was the way to get out of the mini app. And then out of the like, how many mints did we have? Like 700, 800? Like half of them shared it. That's ways you could do, you can play brand, which, like I said, Morpho got deposits and got into like the Farcaster ecosystem a lot more deeper and got brand equity through developers there. Poap got brand there and then BD after with the code base and the showcase. Ask Gina, they just are now in the mini app and they're findable in the base app. So they get some users through that they can show and that can easily top up their wallets. So they get some inflows, though we haven't really marketed or run those playbooks there. That's how I usually look at them and how you then client defines success. We figure out a way to track it through the programmable and then you just have to deliver.
What's the impact of Base app recently on mini apps?
Okay, background story, Base / Coinbase is coming in and needs to figure out a way to get way more developers and applications to build cool stuff on their layer 2 on Base. The way they currently go about doing this is figuring out, okay, if everyone just builds an app that we can push inside of our app, then as long as there are good apps, we'll have retention and usage in our app, which we have a lot of users, we're Base, we can do the marketing, we can do the promotion. The hardest thing for a new crypto app especially is distribution and getting to users. So if we can help you there, you're going to go into our app and it's a win-win for both people. And Base having the brand equity that Base has, as with Coinbase, like US listed security, really good brand value, a lot of users, a lot of volume, tightly integrated into institutions, a good brand. And then that being their blockchain, you get a lot of business interest saying, hey, we see that as a high value shot at a lot of distribution that we can get here. So then they're like, hey, we want a mini app. And that means that your Base obviously has pushed the interest in mini apps, especially on the commercial side, I would say like probably 3 to 4x. And if it opens and then you have the first viral mini apps, I think this will go higher. But that depends on execution on the Base app side, obviously, right? And on the app side to make good apps.
Yeah, it's really, on one side, it could be a matter of time. On the other side, it's really attracting the right people to actually build something there.
Yeah, the cool thing is like, you now have a bunch of people outside of the Farcaster realm. Whereas mini apps before, especially in that social context, were mostly Farcaster. I know there are mini apps on Cello, in a few like stablecoin wallets. There's mini apps in Zapper coming. There's mini apps in World App, where it's like verified humans. But like Farcaster is the only one that has a social network tied into it. It's like, imagine like a little application inside of Twitter. For the older ones, it's going to be like Facebook games and Facebook apps at the time. That's literally only been happening on Farcaster, and Base now has adopted that. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, that's a good point. But also on the Base app there, as you said, like there's theoretically at least the distribution for a lot of people could be solved. Now, a two-edged sword on one side, because if a lot of, at least how it's in my head, if a lot of shitty apps are shipped, will take out the attention from all the good apps, which might lose users and retention. Maybe I'm wrong.
No. If you look at it from the Base side, you're running a chain. So the way that you make money is, well, in the app, ease, but on the chain, any kind of volume and transaction. So how do you define a shitty app? You would define shitty app as your subjective taste. You can also take the objective measurement of how many transactions does it drive and how well does it retain users, meaning we have users coming back to our app because of that app. If you take those objective measures, it's quite easy to measure, and Base is working to optimize both of these. In crypto, does that usually tend to give us some more speculative apps? Yes. Does that also give us some fun games and fun activations like we talked about that will probably just last a few days or a week or two? Yes. Does that mean that there's going to be a bunch of apps competing for the users in their attention? Yes. Is that a good thing? I honestly think so, because if you then have a lot of users in there and you build the one retentive app that owns them, you now have a higher user base to get to a higher quality. Sure. One of the problems we have right now is also we as a company is when we want to build a mini app internally and spin that out, it's like, well, we can either work on client projects or we can build our own mini app. But what's the economics for us to build our own mini app outside of a showcase? Like if we do a showcase, that's cool. That's going to bring in sales in the future. That's an investment. If we build our own mini app as a tool to sell, how big is the market? How many people can you get? And the higher that market is, the more businesses are coming in, the better it is. You can argue how many shitty iOS games are shipped every single day. Does that mean there's a clash of clans because of all the users playing these games? Yes. You can look at it in any way, shape, or form you want. Obviously, the noise is always going to be there. And then the Base team just has to figure out how can they do recommendations of mini apps. We're Embed, a team that we built the SDK for, has mini app recommendations. So you can already go put in a Farcaster username and get mini app recommendations from them for them based on their social profile, their wallet activity, and all of that. So you're kind of then solving for signal, because if that AI then plugs you into the games category or the tools category or the content category because of the optimism show and what you're building outside of it, while it puts me in some tool or IT bubble and then somebody else in a speculative DeFi bubble, then we're all going to see three different mini app recommendations and we're all going to be happy. But that just needs big enough seed of and pool of mini apps and users.
But it's also in essence like it's flipping up the it's using more or less what the content algorithm is doing.
Yes.
But for recommending apps, mini apps in this case.
You will get that. Yeah, you have to. It's kind of like open your app store or Play Store right now. Like, what's the homepage of the app and Play Store? It's like, well, either it's either ads or it's recommendations, but it's based on you. Last time I opened the app store to check this, because I said it in another series, was ads, honestly. Like, I just got plugged every single AI app, though Apple obviously makes money there. But they could also just serve recommendations. And they have something like your like daily productivity app, blah, blah, blah.
That I feel in the past they were serving a lot more recommendations than now, especially all the big corporates.
Well, yeah, probably it's now extractive territory because there's no one challenging them. Let me actually check. Where is my app store? Here's my app store.
I haven't opened the app store in such a long time.
Yep. Okay. So here's the app store. Here's my app store. You can see that on the top, it's Uno, which is Apple Arcade. So Apple pushing their own stuff for free to me, which is good ad spend for them because they don't have to spend it. And it's free value. And then there's a ad right below, which you can see marked here.
That Timu.
Yeah. And when I scroll, then the next thing is like Apple's favorites for essentials. Is that recommendations? I don't know. There's a dating app. There's ChatGPT. There's LinkedIn. And then if you go down further, it's learning, which is Duolingo. So there's today's biggest events. If you go even further down, which is like three games that you can check. So it's literally already expanding into a kind of feed of apps. And like, I'm now scrolling this and it's somewhat infinitely scrollable. So you already have a feed of apps on the homepage of the App Store. Like, see how long this takes to get all the way down?
So even like implementing something similar for Base could be worth it so much, even for Farcaster in this case.
And trust me, it's already getting there because this page is how the Farcaster mini app recommendation now looks like, where it's like on the top.
Pretty much the same.
On the top, you have a recommended app or an ad in a carousel, then a few categories you can pick through in a menu, and then you have the actual apps, which, interestingly enough, is something that they did rather recently. And Base is probably going to converge to a similar design. They just haven't done it yet. And then the question is, what does Base do with the home screen? Because they have messages, they have wallet, they have apps, and they have social. Farcaster, clearly, home screen is social. Base app, currently, home screen up top is explore mini apps, which literally is just a button to explore, aka that's a nothing burger. Then it's my chats, my top three recent chats. Then it's my balance. So it still tries to be a wallet that has chat and mini apps, so that screen doesn't really work. And then featured apps is cut off. So I'll show that on screen as well. But like the mini apps is kind of like half in there.
Which is always like a kind of a struggle when an app does so many different things like the Base app.
Yes.
Like what to actually show.
That's I think what they will have to figure out on that home screen. Because if I open the app, this home screen, I'm leaving the app. And that was the problem they had in the original Coinbase wallet. And we'll see if they've found a way of what retains and figures that out and gets that going. That's the bet that most people are betting on, that Coinbase is going to figure that out, because otherwise they don't figure out retention. If they don't figure out retention, they can do as much as they want to get millions of people in there. It's going
to
leak.
But also when building mini apps, I would say like it's really important to understand like the actual ecosystem where the mini app is going to be sold. Like really understanding, okay, it can go like here, it can go here, and really optimizing for all those different digital real estate points.
Yes, which means you have to build it mobile first, but it can be on different mobile screens. So you can't just test with only one screen size. You have to play around with that a little bit. And then you have to see, okay, how does it behave on desktop than on mobile? Because a mini app on the technical side is a web app, but it's going to be embedded in an iframe on web, but it's going to be in a web view, meaning natively rendered as if it was in a browser on mobile, which for cookies and security is a big thing. Meaning if you have strict security policies on your cookies, that means on desktop, they're not going to be sent. So if you do cookie-based auth in a middleware or something, that's not going to work on desktop in mini apps, but it will work on mobile. And then you're like, why does my desktop app not work? Well, yeah, because you just don't know that this is a quirk and limitation of how the iframe is implemented and that it was an iframe, which is why people are like, hey, you guys at DTEC, you build our mini app, we'll deal with our actual core product, you debug all of that. Yeah, and then the other thing you said about like knowing where it's going to go and rendered is the marketing side. Like, where does this go? How do we market this? How do we attract the best people? Which preview image do we show? Where is that? What's the context? Yeah, you get it.
Yeah, it's just a plenty of things to take into consideration, which is like each of them is like one small addition. And I'm curious, like, since you developed so many mini apps and also for clients, and I believe you also develop mini apps for yourself as well.
My free time is spent on pain debugging my own mini apps so that I know what I do when I debug them for clients.
Fair use of free time. I was going to ask you, like, what are the traps that usually people find themselves in when either developing or working on mini apps or really launching them that might seem like, okay, this is the thing to do, but it's oftentimes like leads to not the best outcome.
Sure. So mini app traps, three things. When you start out, it's not thinking about the why and how to go viral and how to figure out distribution, when you want to share something, how you want to reduce friction. When you develop them, it's just assuming that it's going to work as described. You're in a mini app ecosystem that's literally like where both companies that are driving it, Coinbase and Merkle Manufacturing doing Farcaster, they care about you, but they do not spend the time to make sure that every single little detail is going to be ironed out because they're in the mode of growth and trying to make this work in the first place. So there's going to be some rough edges that you just need to be aware of where it's like better to even read SDK code than to read docs at times or just ask. So that's one thing that people in development miss, that there's going to be a little more debugging than you would expect if you build like a Windows app. Like, how long has Windows been around, right? Like, .NET is 20, 30, 40 years. So like, all of those bugs hopefully have been ironed out, and they haven't. So expect that you're more bleeding edge. And then on the distribution side, it's literally just thinking that you built a mini app and you're going to get magic distribution just because you're a mini app in Base and Farcaster. Like, we talked about distribution, like, for probably, like, 15 minutes out of those 30. It's why shareable moments? Why would the user want to share? What do they want to get? Usually they want to get status if they share something, or you offer them a reward, meaning you spend some ad money, like marketing money on it, because you can track that. You can see, did they share? Did you get that back? Well, then you have their wallet, you send money in there. Yeah, that's probably the three, four ways in those categories.
Which honestly makes sense. Makes perfect sense on the distribution side. And I think like, in regardless of what industry it is, regardless if it's tech or like the marketing or direct response space, a lot of people don't focus as much as like on the aspect of what is the user experience. Yeah. Like, is it actually enjoyable? Is it a product that it's even worth sharing? Or is just you're pushing it because someone else said you should push share?
Also, maybe it's a product worth sharing, but the way the sharing is set up is not worth sharing.
It's interesting.
So think about an app that you go back to daily, like a game or a finance app, but the sharing prompts you to disclose the exact amount that you just deposited into an asset. Well, for a lot of people, their personal finances, they don't want to brag or like share them or keep that private. So if you do that, that's probably not a good way. If you say like, oh, I just aped into this coin, sounds a lot more fun. And if it's a DGNE app, they will share that. They may not share the amount of money they aped into this coin, which, yes, it's one click away on chain potentially, but just not having that in there mentally is a totally different thing. Or for a game, if it's like, hey, I have to request an asset or I have to post about this to get a game asset, then you may do it and then delete the post right after or something. But if it's like, hey, here's a little funny little video campaign, or I just got this success thing. Like, for example, I just beat the end boss and I beat the game, blah, blah, blah. Like, when people usually take screenshots or do YouTube videos about, well, that's what you want to share. It's like, you could even have the wrong sharing moments in an app that should be highly shared.
That's an interesting perspective, honestly. Really thinking through those moments when, like, making the right decisions just as you go into developing the mini app or any app for that reason.
Yeah, or when you use it, like while you use it, when do you feel proud? Like, when are you like, wow? Especially when you have new users and you try them and you do some user testing and you're like, and they're like, oh, this is cool. Every time they say, oh, this is cool, that maybe a thing that you should focus on more and move that further up in the user flow so that they hit that point sooner and see, can you make that shareable? Can you make that feeling shareable in a way that people that see that post or whatever that is shared feel that same emotion and that brings them into the app?
It's perfect sense. It's interesting that you say that, like really focusing on those moments that trigger some form of an emotional response, some kind of a feeling, some kind of an experience as well to drive more user and growth and whatever you're focusing
on. That's where like a mini app really goes way closer to marketing and growth than it goes to like a full blown out like trading terminal or internal business application. Even an internal business application inside a mini app only has a mobile form factor, so you can only do so much on the screen size and on the information to display. But then also the context of the user, like they're in a mini app, in a social app, usually they don't come to that to play your app for an hour. So how much time do you realistically have in between wow moments to hook them and keep them around? There's a difference, like why you could get away with like a 400 hour story game on desktop, but you can't get away with like a 5-second loading screen on an iOS device for somebody to play a game there. Context.
Yeah, so it depends on the context quite a lot.
What's your favorite mini app actually?
I was thinking of like some apps on Farcaster. I haven't used mini apps that much, obviously, even though I'm literally all the time on Farcaster. The one app I really liked that I don't think it ever evolved into a mini app, although it could have, is Stokefire.
He got hired at Base before building it out fully, I think.
Something like that happened, and he never got to the mini app. I believe like something like that would have absolutely worked in a mini app context because it was very, very low demand in the sense of you could finish the game and then just continue in like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And then you come back at it.
Well, that's like a great way to
another. I was going to say another example that I saw was Atlas from Jacob.
Yes.
Which, in my opinion, has a very interesting mechanic for distribution. Absolutely. Yep. I know Jacob is working on different aspects of the game, but the sharing mechanic, I find it quite fascinating of how it pings different users right within the app.
Which gives you a factor of like virality of like 2, 3, 4, 5, depending on how many people it tags, right? You have to make sure that the tag actually is valuable to the users you tag, because otherwise you get bad rep. Negative brand exists. So.
I was also, now that you said that, I also remembered of one mini app. I don't know how it was called. It was something, it had the vibe of Valve, like the Valve, the video game company, and the picture of it.
Large, probably. Matthew Fox.
I don't think so, honestly. It was something Borg, actually. Borg something. That mini app specifically, I absolutely hated it because I signed up to see what it is and it changed my name and it changed my profile picture and my description and everything.
That was not a Matthew Fox app then.
No, I don't know who created it, honestly. They were trying to, like, I get the vision behind it. They were trying to make a movement from it where everyone has, like, these similar things. But in the other side, it's like, no.
Yeah, no. Like, Matthew Fox and team tried to, or, like, what do you mean, like, tried? They built, like, 3, 4, 5 mini apps. They rolled them together into, like, a mini app client where you could just play all of their apps or you could play them standalone across the mini app ecosystems. Though then Clankermon just took off and then they're full-on Clankermon and making that work. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's fair, though. Also with Farcade. Farcade is doing something like that. I think they're doing pretty good.
Farcade is, like, started off as like, oh, here's a few games inside of a mini app like that you can just play games in. And then it became, wait, AI is now good enough that you can prompt code to build your own game inside of our little system that you can in our SDK to have you build games. So they now have a like studio in Farcade, now is called Remix.
Yeah, it's Remix.
They're kind of they're rebranded. But you can now play games or remix existing games, make them more fun, change the colors, blah, 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 and then launch them yourself. And then you kind of have a like feed, rollable feed of games, and then you just pick the one that you find most interesting. And they're testing and playing around with that as a mini app, a Telegram build, literally everywhere. And mini app is the fastest way for them to do it before they go full on native app, and you can just experiment with the core loop as a startup before you go and build the rest out.
That's a really interesting point that you brought up there. Like mini apps can really be a testing ground for a startup.
That's what Atlas also is doing. Like, okay, look at it this way. We talked about remakes, so let's take that as a case study for that. Well, okay, so what do you have to do to build an arcade feed of games inside, like, of an iOS app that you get users to? Okay, well, one, you have to first build the iOS app that then generates games that work inside of iOS. Okay, if you built those games as web games originally so that they could work across any platform easily, okay, then you just build an iOS app wrapper around that AI. But then, okay, so you have to get a bunch of games right so that there's like something on the feed, and then you have to get the studio right, and then you onboard people. Maybe you just do that step after step, and then you onboard people. Your onboarding, though, is, oh, if you're not in the App Store, then you're in test flight. So how many users can you actually get into a test flight realistically? If it's on the App Store, then you've kind of gone through the launch process. You're now in the App Store. Every single update that you ship takes like a few days to ship, unless it's like React Native and you do some hot reloading. But even then you have to do distribution and get people to literally use your app, blah, blah, blah. So you have to do social media marketing or some kind of way to do marketing to get people into your app. If you're a mini app, you just make it shareable. Then you're like running around in the feed where people click it, same app. They stay in the same app. They just play it. And you see how does the retention go of those people that have tried it, that you've onboarded. So it's a way faster data cycle where you just build a web app that is faster to build than a mobile app. And if you update it, the update is live, like instantly for all users.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense, especially if you're just starting out. But Samuel, like, is there anything else that maybe I should have asked you that we haven't covered so far that you'd like to share?
One thing I always find interesting is the Farcaster social context. I think that's underexplored. And I also think monetization is underexplored. Let me tell you why. Monetization in mini apps is a hard topic because if you're a crypto app, you take a transaction fee, you're monetizing. So you just need to get enough volume. If you're any kind of tool, you just have to figure out your price point. You monetize it easily by just plugging into the wallet of the user. If you're neither of those two, then it becomes rough. Like, yeah. What if you're a remix and people just play games? How do you monetize that? How do you make money out of that? And there's like, you're now integrated with crypto. So you can do a bunch of interesting stuff around tokens, coins, wherever you're going to go, collectibles, trades, interest even. Like, you can have users deposit something or earn something. Like, literally just load up their in-game wallet balance, like an in-game token balance, and then you on the back end, without the user noticing, deposit that into some like stable coin yield farm, where it's like US treasuries on the end. So you then earn money on the coins that the users have. Like, imagine Fortnite earning on their V-Bucks. And again, those kind of monetization models aren't really deployed and employed yet, which, going back to the earlier conversation, I think is a matter of scale. Like, you need way more apps just for people to play around with that, because that gives you way more users. And also way more users gives you more apps. So it's like this cycle that you have to jumpstart like somehow.
It's kind of like a being a pseudo bank, more or less.
Bro, I honestly think everyone that has a balance will be a bank through DeFi.
Understandable.
It just makes sense. Like, imagine, like, we're usually working on contracts, right? So if the client pays us, honestly, like, during that time where we don't pay out the money for, like, next month's, like, end of the month salary or whatever else we have in expenses, if we could have that money earn interest, okay, that banks for the last 10 years haven't really given you any kind of interest. So maybe I just have that at DeFi. Or don't take us as contractors, take somebody that ships a product. So take Amazon. Amazon gets a payment from you today that they instantly forward to the merchant. But what if they just say, oh, we'll withhold that until the post office has said that it's actually dispatched at the client, so that you actually dispatch it? Well, the reason they would do that is not to annoy you. They would literally just figure out a way to keep your money for 2 days. Why? Because on those 2 days, if they earn 0.01% interest in 2 days, which annualized maybe like, I don't know, but say they earn like 3% annualized and then they make a few percent on those 2 or 3 days. Well, the amounts of volume Amazon has is like billions of dollars. So take a few percent on billions of dollars. All of a sudden, Amazon has like 100 to 400 million more in revenue just by withholding money for 2 days, and make it a safety feature so your refund goes back to the customer more easily.
On the other side, like, even making things this way, like, opens up completely different business models, which on one side, it could just obliterate some certain things. Because if you are, like, if you have an app where usually, at least from my perspective, how I see it, is like, a SaaS, a high ticket SaaS or whatever, now you can just compete at a much lower ticket and make a lot more money on the back end just by because you have better economics.
Yes. Another thing I also think is anything that kind of stores money, the fees will go to zero because the fees are hidden in interest. It's Fiverr. So on Fiverr, what happens is Fiverr is actually a really good example. They're in the business of, I pay somebody to get a specified job done. They take a fee on me hiring them, and that person gets paid out once I have approved that the delivery was correct. So yeah. In that time span, Fiverr can do the interest that we talked about by just taking that money, plugging it into Amorpho or some other like Yield service or even like a regular bank account and get interest on it. Well, if they have high enough volumes, who doesn't say that their fee should go to zero? Because if there's a competitor and the competitor does that and you don't, then they just make the fee zero because they earn on the interest. Take credit cards, for example. How do credit cards work? Well, they settle within like 7 to 14 days.
On purpose, not because they cannot do it faster.
But so say they do that and then they have that money there for 7 to 14 days. They can earn a bunch of interest in those 7 to 14 days just by volume of transactions they process. Like if they process trillions of dollars and they get 3% annualized on like not 3 billion total, but say you divide it by like 300, it's like, okay, on a few billion dollars, you get 3% annualized. Well, you don't have to even take a credit card fee anymore. They still do take a fee because they have that power of there being three companies, right?
They can do it.
Yeah. So
whatever. Makes perfect sense though. But, well, Sam, thanks for sharing this. Actually, it's a really interesting, not only a thinking point, but also an action point for a lot of people, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I do think like if you go back through this episode, there's probably going to be a bunch of things you can take notes on or like act on.
Even I'm pretty sure even things where you can just start mini apps on right now.
Yeah, we should probably take the transcript, plug it into AI and have it shit out like mini app ideas.
So let's do that. Let's
we
try
should
it
literally
out.
Do that because we have a hackathon coming in a month.
What? Let's try it. Why yeah. not?
And if a team builds it, I'll send it to you.
Awesome. Sam, it was, as always, it was a pleasure having you again.
Dude, likewise. Thank you for having me.